I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of November. It's time for All Things Political. Francesca Chambers is our guest this hour. She's White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She was at the Republican presidential debate in Boulder last week, and she's written some behind-the-scenes look at the digs that everybody was given and why it was that Donald Trump got better headquarters in the facility than some of the other people. Is it because he was polling at that time pretty high? We'll be looking at just a lot of issues. The U.S. is going to deploy up to 50 special forces to Syria to advise and assist the groups that are fighting ISIS. Do we know which groups are most effective in fighting ISIS? The White House is saying these forces do not have a combat mission. CNBC is still getting a lot of criticism after Wednesday night's debate. Ted Cruz is suggesting that perhaps for the next debate, there should be moderators like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. Do you think that CNBC did a disastrous job, or are they taking too much criticism? And the Republican National Committee now is meeting with people from various networks. They have withdrawn from an NBC because they are with CNBC debate in February. They want the moderators to be less harsh and to have more control over the debate. Were the moderators terrible, do you think, in last week's debate? We'll be looking at Jeb Bush. A lot of people are saying that his campaign is just losing steam and that he probably will not be a viable candidate. He appears to be, if you were listening to the news from NPR, changing his strategy just a bit. And we have other things to discuss as well. Feel free to join this conversation anytime you would like. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Francesca, thank you very much for being with us again. Hi.
Thank you. Yes, it's always a good time.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So let's just do a little bit of behind-the-scenes talk before we get into some very serious issues. Is it true that Donald Trump really got lavish digs in Colorado?
Well, you know, I will point out, as the Republican National Committee told me, you know, when I was asking them about all this, that, you know, they were in a space in which not everyone could have the same exact type of room. You know, this wasn't a theater where there were dressing rooms that all looked the same. It was at a sports complex, and they had to make use of every space possible. And so, as such, some people had nicer rooms than others. And the way that they decided to do it was to give the better rooms to people in terms of how that they were polling. And as that turned out, you know, Donald Trump is in first, and so he got the best digs, as you noted. Well, the controversy came about mostly after Carly Fiorina had a jacuzzi in her green room.
Ooh.
That's where this really started to get very heated, literally. And, you know, what ended up happening, though, was that in this peace process, to make some of the candidates who were really upset, Carly willingly gave up the room with the jacuzzi in it. She ended up in some other room. But it did turn into be quite the big deal in Boulder last week.
Well, how in the world would you have time to even use a jacuzzi as you're getting ready for a debate?
Well,
huh?
You know, one thing that I've said, and, you know, since then is, if someone had to have the jacuzzi, because, by the way, it was a locker room. It wasn't like they ordered a jacuzzi and put it in there for her. She was actually in a locker room that, if you actually saw the pictures, wasn't very nice looking.
Right.
Other than the jacuzzi that was in there, she actually, I think, had one of the worst looking rooms, if you're comparing just the way the rooms looked. But, you know, I've been saying that if someone had to have the room with the jacuzzi to soak their feet, maybe it should be the woman who had to stand on stage in heels for 2 hours.
Exactly. Absolutely. I would take my shoes off if I were in that situation,
exactly.
Francesca.
That's what I would do.
Absolutely. That's not easy. Well, I guess that so many of the candidates thought that CNBC did a horrible job. Chris Christie saying the moderators were awful. They asked irrelevant questions. That representatives from the various campaigns were meeting yesterday to pressure networks to give them different kinds of moderators and different kinds of questions. Can you tell us about that? What do they want?
They have a a growing list of demands that I would say, and I think that your listeners will think some are more reasonable than others. I mean, you know, the green room thing is sort of a funny thing, but I will just add in there that if you saw some of the rooms that some of the candidates had, I think you could understand why Rand Paul, for instance, was upset that his room was basically like a room with a toilet in it. Uh-huh. And then, you know, Trump had again, sort of lavish digs. But some of the other complaints that they've had, you know, moving forward in the debate process that are directed, I would say, more at the networks hosting debates and less at the Republican National Committee, which, you know, set up the green rooms, are that they want opening and closing statements. They want the ability to be able to give direct to camera their message to the American people and not have it go through the filter of answering the questions in the back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that's something they almost universally agree on. Another thing that they said that they want is the time, the length. They don't want another 3-hour debate like the second debate they had, because it does get tiring for everybody standing up there, they've said. You know, they want to limit it, you know, to roughly 2 hours. You know, some of the other things that they've, you know, since listed off, like you said, is they want some moderators that they feel are going to be at least more interested in getting to the facts and sticking to questions that they think have some relevance in the debate versus the types of questions that they feel were unfair in the last one, which is where they did get asked a question, you know, about fantasy football. And Chris Christie was very obsessed about that.
Yeah. Well, they also, Ted Cruz suggested that they need to have some conservative moderators. And I think he suggested mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity as a couple who might be good. What do you think about that? Is that something that most other candidates would also warmly embrace? And is that a possibility?
Well, you know, even though if you have Republicans or conservatives, that doesn't mean that someone doesn't have a bias against mm-hmm. someone else, you know?
Right.
It's not just about liberal versus conservative or Republican versus Democrat. Even within the Republican Party and the, you know, conservatives, there's a lot of different factions. I mean, just looking at this primary and the vote percentages, you have Donald Trump over here on the one end, you have Ben Carson. You know, you have Marco Rubio doing really well. These are candidates that are all so very different and bring out very different parts of the party. And I think you could say the same of potential debate moderators as well, even if they're conservative. I can just personally in my mind think of some of the comments that some of the radio hosts have said about some of those candidates who would be standing on that stage. And I think it would be hard for them to deny that they've been a little bit more critical of some than others.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think about the first debate, Francesca, on Fox, and I thought it was a really good debate. The moderators, it's considered a conservative, obviously, television network. I thought those moderators were quite tough on everybody.
Well, here's the thing that I've heard some people say, and I agree with this a little bit, which is that CNN, you know, was tough, and Fox was tough, and CNBC was tough, and perhaps some of what you saw playing out at this debate was that at this point in the process, the candidates were so upset about so many things that were going on that they didn't like. Again, the opening and closing statements thing was a big deal for mm-hmm. them. And you know, and how the length of time and et cetera, and then the questions that they were getting, that it kind of just spilled over at this debate. And while the questions in some cases, you know, were a little bit tougher and possibly, you know, cross the line in the way that they were asked, could have been asked better, I guess, is a way to put it. You know, I've heard this from a couple campaigns that, you know, once tempers had calmed down after the fact, that part of what was going on there, I think, was just, again, you know, this is the third debate, and they'd had a lot of things blow up and finally spilled over.
You know, I'm with him on 3 hours. I think 3 hours is way too long for somebody in the audience to sit through, don't you? That's a long time.
You know, and after the 3-hour debate, as Trump would say, the Gone with the Wind debate, Gone with the Wind is actually a lot longer, but it's now being branded the Gone with the Wind debate that was 3 hours long. There were lots of folks on Twitter saying the same thing, you know, and that isn't just media and reporters. There were a lot of just average folks, like the ones who listen to your radio show, who were saying that this is just so long. And well, a lot of them stuck around because they wanted to see, you know, how it ended. They were complaining about it. And so maybe while they stuck around for that one, they might not stick around for the entire 3 hours if, let's say, Fox Business News, which has the next debate, had a 3-hour debate, particularly as that one's about the economy.
Yeah.
I don't know that many people who want to listen to Social Security and the economy and entitlement reform and all those sorts of issues for more than 2 hours.
Oh, I know a few, Francesca. You'll probably hear from them this hour, but maybe not a whole lot. Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls because we have people who want to talk about the debates and we want to move on to other subjects too as we speak with Francesca. It's all things political, so let's take some questions, your thoughts on the debates and all that the Republican presidential candidate spokespersons are saying about how unfair CNBC was. They have withdrawn from a February debate with NBC because they're owned by the same company, although who knows, that may get smoothed over by the time that debate is scheduled. Do you think that moderators were unfair? Do they set the tone for a debate? Were they any more tough than Fox, or were they more irrelevant than Fox was? 800-486-8655 is our number, and we start our calls for you with Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. So basically, I just probably say this, as an American citizen that has many friends outside the country, this was embarrassing. To watch this debate. Secondly, they had no respect for each other, no respect for the moderators, and no respect for the rules. I don't see if we change the moderators that will actually change anything. I think, if anything, we need to have more harsh moderators that will enforce the rules and maybe even offer them, say, we'll kick you off the stage if you can't follow the basic rules that middle school and high schooler debaters can follow.
Mike, what did you find embarrassing?
I had fallen embarrassing just the lack of respect for each other. Mm. How can these guys have, you know, literally interrupt each other like they did, have no respect for the entire system, and then expect American people to say, oh, you're the person we want to sit down next to Putin and have serious civil talks?
Francesca, isn't that all, isn't it all about the way the system operates, though, that people can have vigorous debate and maybe talk over each other, or did it get out of hand?
Well, you know, Mike brings up a good point about the, you know, them kind of letting the whole thing run wild. There were a lot of times where the beeper had went off, the candidates
right.
just kept talking. They even tried to jump in, I will say, several times, though. The candidates just kept talking anyway. I think at a certain point, they just got tired of telling people, your time is up, your time is up, you know, and just kind of gave up. But I do agree that that was another complaint that I heard about the debate from people watching it, is that people are just talking over and yelling at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And as a former high school debater myself, I can tell you that probably wouldn't have flown if I wanted to win.
It's an excellent point. Follow the rules that high school debaters have to follow. Absolutely. Let's talk about the aftermath of the debate. Jeb Bush really seems to be having very serious problems with his campaign. It's really interesting because just a few months ago, it was a foregone conclusion that this was going to be a Clinton-Bush campaign. We talked about it a lot. What's happened to him?
It's amazing. You know, you're right. A year ago, because, you know, looking back, it was right around the Thanksgiving Christmas time that Bush, you know, started putting his presidential ambitions out there. The race has changed so much since he got in June, and, you know, Trump got in the race as well. And I think that is what changed. You know, I don't think that Bush expected Donald Trump to get in this race. I don't think a lot of people expected him to
right.
get in this race.
Right.
And that is fundamentally what has changed the dynamic here. I think that if Trump wasn't in the race, then Bush probably would be doing a whole lot better, because Trump is just a completely different type of presidential candidate, you know, than we've really seen. And he defies all sorts of odds and expectations. You know, you would think that if someone was doing the things that he's doing and attacking people and, you know, whatnot, that they wouldn't be doing very well. But Trump does very well because he's, I think, refreshing. And I think, you know, even if he says things that are not quote unquote politically correct sometimes, I think that people like that he's giving it to them straight versus telling them what he thinks they want to hear. And I think that they're tired of politicians doing that. And I think that they think that a lot of politicians do that, and they don't trust a lot of politicians. And I just don't think that Bush expected that to be the year that we're having.
Do you think, though, that he also helped set a negative tone, people yelling at each other and talking over each other, because you can hardly say that he engages in a great deal of civil discourse a lot of the time, Donald Trump, that is.
But, you know, if you look back to the very first debate, he wasn't even the first person to, like, just talk over someone, yell at them, and throw the first punch. That was actually Rand Paul who did that. You know, when the very first debate, they asked who here, you know, can, you know, would say that you would endorse the Republican if you didn't win, or who's thinking about running as an independent. You know, those are the questions that were asked. And then it was, you know, Rand Paul that jumped in and was just like, you know, attacking Trump over that issue, because remember at that time he hadn't ruled out a third party bid yet. So it's not just Trump who's doing these sorts of things at the debates and setting like an aggressive tone, is all I mean to say. You know, Chris Christie has also been quite aggressive in these debates as well, and Carly Fiorina too. I mean,
right.
there are I think a lot of them on stage who've hit pretty hard when they felt like they had to.
Mike, thanks for your call. Barbara in Waupaca. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a slightly different take on this issue. I do not have cable or Wi-Fi at home. And I took my computer to where I could get Wi-Fi. And to get the debate, I had to click on my cable provider. So I couldn't watch it on my computer.
Mm.
And I think there are a lot of people in my position without mm-hmm. either cable or Wi-Fi. And it was kind of upsetting to me that you needed to expend this kind of money. I mean, it's another way that money is sort of talking in our political life. An informed public needs to have access to what should be a public debate. And I remember early on in the 60s and 70s, you know, all three, not cable, but regular stations, carried the debates. You could
sure.
hardly miss them.
Right.
And I just think that something like this needs to be more publicly available. It should not be just for whatever mm-hmm. cable station has earned the right to show the debates.
Yeah. Well, it's a valid point, Francesca.
You know, and unfortunately, some of the debates are going to be this year. You're going to have more of an opportunity to view them than other ones. I mean, look at CNBC, for example. CNBC is not even carried, even if you did, you know, depending on what package you have, you might not have CNBC anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of homes that Fox Business News isn't in, by the way, as well. And so, you know, when you look up to the next debate, I think a lot of people who couldn't watch the CNBC debate are also not going to be able to watch the Fox Business News debate. But here's the thing. That's exactly why I think that the Republican National Committee was having NBC have a debate, you know, and some of these other channels that are more widely viewed. And so, like you said, maybe they'll, before that debate actually comes around, maybe they'll patch up the relationship. But otherwise, you know, you could end up in a situation where another one of these networks that's hard to watch will get the debate.
Thank you very much for your call, Barbara. Francesca Chambers is our guest, and it's All Things Political you're listening to. She's White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She was at the debate, the last Republican debate in Boulder, so we're getting some behind-the-scenes look and analysis of what happened. And, of course, there are ramifications in terms of poll numbers and who we're watching as a result of those debates. There's also other news that we will cover. Paul Ryan, of course, from Wisconsin, becoming Speaker of the House. He has to mend a broken party, and we'll talk about that with Francesca. The U.S. deploying up to 50 special forces in Syria to advise and assist groups that are fighting ISIS. Do you think that we know, and how are we determining which groups are most effective in fighting ISIS? White House saying these forces do not have a combat mission. Do you think that that's going to hold true in the long run? Here's our phone number. One line is open for you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page, where we love to read your messages, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for All Things Political. Francesca Chambers, our guest, Dan in Brookfield. Hi.
Hi. Just an observation. I hope that the candidates at the debate are a little bit more careful, because they might have to go in front of a congressional hearing and face 10, 11 hours of questioning rather than 3 hours spread amongst how many people? 9 people. You know, so just an observation.
All right. That was one long hearing, wasn't it, Francesca?
Yes, it was. It was quite a long hearing. I don't know how many people, you know, tuned in to see the entire thing, but it was pretty, you know, it was pretty grueling up there. But that being said, it's very unusual for a president or a presidential candidate to have to be up there for that long. So I'm doubtful the candidates will have to do something like that anytime soon again.
Do you think the Republicans did themselves well by having such a grueling long hearing or not?
You know, I've got mixed feelings on it. I think in one sense, it may have helped Secretary Clinton because it did, I think, make it look like, you know, they just kept going because they were trying to find something, mm-hmm. and they were maybe trying a little bit too hard. But at the same time, there were moments in that debate, sometimes, you know, later on, hours in, you know, where you know, someone got around to a question that, you know, revealed something that ended up being important in the long run. For instance, as it turns out, Ambassador Chris Stevens did not have Hillary Clinton's personal email or way to contact her to let her know about the problems that were going on in the security situation. Well, as we've since, you know, found out, it seemed like a lot of other people seem to have Hillary Clinton's email, including Ben Affleck and all kinds of other people. And I know some Republicans and other, you know, and just generally people have kind of taken offense to the idea that, you know, ambassadors in very dangerous countries wouldn't have been able to contact her if they had a problem personally. But, you know, celebrities or just, you know, other people in general had that contact information. So, you know, it depends on how you look at it and if you see that information as important.
Mm-hmm. So the email controversy is not going away.
I don't think that it is going to go away because, or at least in the next couple months, because the way the State Department is releasing her emails, and by the way, this wasn't their choice to do it this way. This is how a court mandated they had to do it. They're releasing them on the last day of every month, a big batch of them. And if they had released them all at one time, you know, I think it would have been a little bit more difficult to pick through every individual email, you know, and find things that are embarrassing to her or, you know, and not even because she did anything wrong, but just because they're personally embarrassing to her or, you know, just again to like pick apart everything that she did. But because they're releasing them on the last day of every month you're going to get a new story, wave of attacks on her. And so I think that until those emails stop, which won't be until January, then we're going to keep hearing about the email issue. But after that, I think, you know, when it's not put in front of the public's face every month like that, you know, you're probably going to hear a lot less about it.
Thanks, Dan, for your call. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, there's one thing that unites these 15 or 16 members of the Republican group that's seeking the presidency, and it's their absolute hatred. Their absolute hatred of those of us who belong to organized labor. There hasn't been a single question asked about their labor policy. There hasn't been a single question asked about the Employee Free Choice Act. There hasn't been a single question asked about how their party and the destruction of organized labor under their party has led to the gross inequality in wages in this country that we face in 2015. And one of the pygmies in the Republican race, our governor, got out because he espoused all this anti-union hatred, and he realized that his campaign was going nowhere because of that stance.
Francesca.
Well, I disagree that that's why Scott Walker got out of the race. As a political journalist, you know, I look at all the factors, and I think it was because he was out of money. And he was out of money because, you know, they were spending too much money. He actually had a lot of money and could have stayed in the race for a long time. But if you look at his, if you're a nerd like me and you go through financial disclosures for fun, then you'll see that they were actually just spending too much money too fast. It was unsustainable. And then, of course, they started to lose donors after he did really poorly in the debates. But as to his point about the questions that are being asked of Republican candidates, you know, there's a lot of questions on a lot of issues that haven't been asked yet. I think part of that is because there's so many candidates who are on stage. It's so hard, you know, especially when you're talking about the yelling and the back and forth. And then if one person gets attacked, then they're allowed by all the debate rules to respond to that. And so it just leads to chains of back and forth. And I think, again, with so many people on the stage, it's going to be hard to get in substantial questions. With the rules like that, it's going to be hard. And so I think that perhaps you'll see, again, deeper down into the issues when there's less people on stage, but also with this next debate on Fox Business News, when, again, they have committed to asking, you know, deep questions about the economy and other issues like that.
When is the next debate?
It will be. Wait, I don't know if you're joking.
No, I'm not joking.
I was going to say because it's in Wisconsin.
Oh,
so
it
I was like, is
Wisconsin.
This a test? I know my Wisconsin trivia, and it is on November 10th in Milwaukee,
and I will be
at that one as well.
Oh, you will?
Yes.
It's next week.
Next week.
Wow.
And I'll be at that one as well. And then they don't have another debate, though, for more than a month because of the holidays. So this is really the last opportunity, I think, for some of these candidates who are, you know, kind of hanging by a thread to really give, you know, a final push there.
Yeah. All right. Well, you should drop by. We'll have coffee.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay. All right. Nancy in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. Two questions are points. I have to profess that I don't know a lot about the debate process, but is it beyond the realm of possibility that each candidate could be presented with a question? They need to answer the question as to what their views, their policies are on this particular issue. We go on to the next person. Same question, what are your views and policies? They cannot bring up another candidate at all, just what they would do. And the questions could be, as the previous caller said, so many questions, and our guest also said, so many questions have not been asked yet that are pertinent questions, I think, to the American people. Is that beyond the realm of possibilities just to do it that way in a debate format? Second, mm-hmm. I wish that these people, our candidates, would take a look at the frustration that they feel right now and equate that with the frustration that I know I feel, and I think a lot of this country might feel, about just the running of Congress itself. As frustrated as they are with the debates, we're as frustrated with them.
Thank you for the call, Nancy. Francesca.
I think that's an interesting way to describe it, and I actually do think you might see, again, a little bit more of that down the road. I think in the first couple debates, you know, before they were getting down into policies, I do think that moderators and the candidates themselves were trying to push back, at least on what they saw as negative stories emerging about them, perceptions of them that they didn't want, you know, people to have. I think sometimes they figure that before people will listen to what they want to do, then people have to want to listen to them at all. And they're not going to want to listen to them at all if they, you know, don't like them. And they don't like them because they've heard some negative things about them that made headlines. And I think you'll notice that that's what a lot of the questions have kind of have been around. Not just this person attacked you, what do you think of it? But they have been, you know, Mr. Rubio, you had a certain stance on immigration. You know, you no longer support that stance. You know, what would you prefer to do now? Explain that. You know, there's been questions like that that are about what they would do as well. But again, I do think you'll see a lot more of that as the fighting and the back and forth gets old to people.
Yeah. Well, she talked about the House, and let's talk about Paul Ryan for a moment, who also mentioned how the House was broken when he was accepting the speakership of the House last week. He has a huge task here. You wonder if anybody's going to be able to bring all these factions together. What does he have to do, Francesca, after he gets the smoke smell out of the office?
It is a huge task, and frankly, that's why he didn't want to do it.
Right.
You know, like, there's hardly any speaker who walks away from that job with the American people liking him or her, or, you know, even their colleagues being happy with the way that they've handled things, because it is a very, very, very tough job. You know, if you remember, Newt Gingrich also resigned from the speakership, you know, years and years ago, after, you know, they had quite the victory and he was doing well, but then, you know, things turn. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what Ryan's afraid of. I think he's afraid that he's on a good career track. You know, he was in charge of Ways and Means. That's a very powerful committee. He has a bright political future. He's very young still. And I think he was very worried that if he took this job, no one's going to be happy with what he does, no matter what he does. And it's just, I think he was worried that it was kind of a career ender to be speaker. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing that you do. Well, and, you know, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, is all I was going to say. You know, if you handle it right. And I think it remains to be seen yet if Paul Ryan has the type of leadership it would take to make it not a career ender.
Yeah. Well, he's also been known as this big policy guy. He has very deep concerns about Social Security and Medicare and other kinds of programs. Will he be able to advance his policy ideas, or won't it be that kind of job for him?
Well, I think that's maybe why he did end up taking the job, besides the fact that his party needed him. And, you know, not a lot of them wouldn't be around for very much longer, himself included. I think if someone didn't take the reins and start steering the Republican Party in the right direction after everything that's happened recently. So I think he knew that as well. But, you know, as Speaker, you do get to have control over the agenda to a certain extent, and you know, you can drive the conversation in the direction that you want. So it is a good opportunity, I think, for him to push along some of those reforms that he may want. But again, even if he gets Republicans on board with them and the Senate on board with them, you still have a Democratic president, at least, you know, until 2016. And so whether or not he'd be able to get those reforms through and get the president's signature is an entirely different thing.
Right. Alma in Montello. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, supposedly Marco Rubio won the debate, and yet he out and out lied. Fact checks proved it. Now, how come candidates are allowed to lie? Donald Trump did too. My mother's had an old saying, you can lock from a thief, but not from a liar.
What did he lie about, Elma?
He lied about his finances. He lied about a couple of things. Donald Trump, of course, lied about a position that he'd taken that's on his website. Why aren't they called on it? Are the moderators not prepared enough, don't know enough about the candidates to call them on their lies? He lost any chance of having a vote for me because of his lies.
Francesca.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, felt slightly differently, or at least Republicans felt slightly differently, which is that the moderators were too hard. They thought that they were calling them out too much. You know, there were several times where it got combative between the candidates and the moderators when the candidates felt that the moderators were pressing too hard on certain issues. You know, there was a point where it came to Trump's, to immigration and, you know, something that Trump may or may not have said, you know, about Marco Rubio and another section on taxes as well. And, you know, the moderators pushed back, and even there was a commercial break, and one of the moderators came back and said, oh, I found the thing you said you didn't say. Here it is. You know, and got back in his face about it. So I think that they were holding them accountable when they thought that they were not telling the truth. But at the same time, you know, someone else earlier in the show was saying, you know, there's too much back and forth. Let's just talk about the issues. And so it kind of goes to that again. If they kept, you know, if they kept doing that the whole entire debate, we'd never get on to talking about another issue. You know, the whole thing would just be even more fighting. And so I think that, you know, to a certain extent, moderators, you know, just want to move on at a certain point and just talk about another issue.
Thank you very much for your call, Alma. Cheryl in Conover. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is this. I am absolutely flabbergasted that the Republicans are going to have their debate in a town called Milwaukee, where I was born and raised, which happens to be one of the largest union towns in the United States. I would be very surprised to see a lot of people out there with signs. I can't believe they would have picked Milwaukee to do the debate in after especially what happened with our illustrious governor and what he did to our unions, both for all people who are involved in unions. I just hope the unions show their might come November 10th.
Do you know why Milwaukee was selected? Actually, I should know that, Francesca, and I don't. Boy, Scotty's looking it up right now. But do you think it's an unusual choice because it is a union town?
Well, Scott Walker, though, was also elected 3 times in the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, there are other states that have Democratic governors. So it is a state with a Republican governor. Maybe the town isn't the most conservative, to say the least. But, you know, it is a state with a Republican governor, a governor who was theoretically still going to be in the debate by this time, might I add. You
right.
know, they also, that you know, one was in Ohio. You know, they had Cleveland, Ohio. They had Simi Valley, California. It's not like they're specifically choosing areas that they deem will be conservative. I don't know exactly why Milwaukee was chosen, but I will say from an organizing standpoint and going back to the complaints that the candidates had about the last place, they've got to find spaces where you can have rooms, you know, green rooms for all the candidates who are running. You know, last time they had 14 candidates in the debates. you know, there's got to be an area for media. There's got to be an area for volunteers. There's so many, you know, it has to be a very large space. And they're having a lot of debates. And so are Democrats. You know, Democrats are having six, not as many. But there's also general election debates. And so I will say that I think at a certain point, where are you going to have all these debates at?
And Scotty did look this up. It's going to be at the Milwaukee Theater, which is it right here in downtown Milwaukee. Milwaukee Theater, downtown Milwaukee. So it is a large space. But
well, they always choose, I will say this too. I know another thing that as an event, you know, event planner you're looking at is you've also got to think about hotels. You've got to think about, is this an easily accessible place to have it at? You know, for instance, Milwaukee Theater, there's so many hotels, you know, in walking distance of that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, something that's very helpful when you have a large amount of people coming in. And I would presume that's why, right, part of the reason why that location was selected.
Well, and you have to eat.
And you have to eat.
Right. There are restaurants around.
There weren't that many. I was going to say there weren't that many at the last debate, and that actually was a huge problem.
I understand that. People get hungry, particularly when you're covering a debate. Cheryl, thanks very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. This is All Things Political, which we always have, in case you've never heard us before. Every Monday, we've done this for years and years and years. Every Monday at 1, we have someone with us to talk about the politics of the previous week and look at what's ahead. Francesca Chambers has been with us before. She is White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She was at the Republican presidential debate last week, and she'll be at the next one in Milwaukee, which is coming right up on November 10th. 9 days from now. 8 days from now. Right here in Milwaukee. Well, here's our phone number. We've been looking at the debates. She's been covering the Republican presidential campaign most recently, but she certainly can speak to the Democratic campaign. I do want, at some point, I wonder if this worries you or if you think this is the right thing to do, that we are going to be sending special forces to Syria, 50 special forces, to advise and assist the groups that are fighting ISIS. I guess I would ask, after doing several shows on this, who are those groups, and could this lead to more combat troops there? And what do you think of that? Here's our phone number, 800. Lines are open now. They've been just crowded, but now you can get through. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 is the number. Francesca, as you look at, and I know you're the White House correspondent, this decision to deploy up to 50 special forces to Syria, do you as a journalist have a good idea, because I sure don't, what rebel forces are most effective in fighting ISIS, who we're going to be advising and assisting? Is it clear?
Well, I think that's sort of the thing that Congress, you know, who does look at this very closely, is still trying to figure out. You know, they ended the original program to train the moderate Syrian rebels because they couldn't find enough of them. It wasn't very effective. They ended up only training 54 of them when they thought that they were going to be training, you know, thousands of them. In the end, there were 54 who were effectively trained.
Right.
And then within months, that was down to 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that were still out there fighting. And so they determined that that program, just training and equipping them, through that route was a bad idea. So earlier this month, they ended it, and now they're saying, well, we're going to actually send in special forces to be doing the equipping and the training, and we're going to be helping them intelligence gather and whatnot. But there's only 50 of the special forces going in. So you have, you know, some Republican candidates, and, you know, Lindsey Graham is, you know, more than just a Republican candidate. He is a senator. He is, you know, very well versed in this issue. And, you know, he said that's not enough, that he absolutely believes that there should be more. He said yesterday, sending 50 American special forces into Syria in the eyes of ISIL shows that Obama is not all in.
Well,
so he thinks there should be more.
Is this a sign that there may be more? The president has said, no, this isn't going to be Iraq. It's not going to be Afghanistan. I think people are a little nervous about what it's going to be. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that he's pretty, obviously pretty reticent. And I also think that he knows at this point that if he goes back on something they have said again and again and again, that would just be devastating for his presidency. They didn't say one time that they wouldn't have Americans in combat roles. I sit in this briefing room, you know, almost every day, and they have repeatedly stated that. And I just think that, you know, he's promised that they would draw down troops in Afghanistan. He promised that the war in Iraq would, you know, be ended when he first came in. I think that he just can't put new boots on the ground as far as his legacy goes. And I do think that that's something that he's worried about. There's not that much time left. I think more realistically, unless something happens in terms of something major happens that's a game changer in the fight with ISIS, it's probably a situation in where he does not do that and leaves it for the next president to handle.
Yeah. What if, as the Russians are suggesting, I don't know what group claimed responsibility for the downing of the Russian airliner that killed so many people over the weekend, but there are concerns now that it exploded in midair and that indeed there may have been some kind of missile or something that hit that plane.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of complicates everything, doesn't it? What a mess this whole area is. What a horrible mess.
It is. Oh, yes. And that's like sort of the thing that you have going on. You have so many hands in the cookie jar at this point is one way to see it. You know, you have the U.S. who is operating in that region, and, you know, it's 60-some alleys. You have Russia who is operating independently in that region, as well as Iran. They have military presence there. Iran actually has forces on the ground there. You know, and recently they met to discuss all of those things, and they also are now, the U.S. and Russia, not so much coordinating in the sense that they're not coordinating military operation in the sense that they're working together, but coordinating now in the sense that Russia is telling the U.S. when it's going to be taking, you know, airstrikes and in what areas, just so that they don't in the air, you know, cross paths or have any problems. That's something that they're trying to avoid. But still, again, you just have so many groups that are in that area, and I think that's contributing to the problem as well.
Yeah. Our number is 800-486-8655. We have a few minutes left and would love to hear from you as we talk all things political. Jason in Portage, hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right,
Thank
Jason.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I have a question and a comment, not in that order. You know, as far as Donald Trump goes, he's not a career politician. He's got these great ideas and such, but maybe he's what our country needs. I mean, I'm wondering, because I'm a Republican, name my daughter Reagan. I'm wondering if maybe he's what we need. And my question for you is, do you think the right people, basically, is the electoral vote going to be, are they going to take him seriously all the way through this? Or is he just going to be, is this all for show? That's my main question.
Thanks, Jason.
Well, the electability question, I think, is what Jeb Bush and some of the, you know, the people in the race who have been in politics for a long time, I think that's what they are concerned about, is that, you know, when the Republican primary gets over, assuming that Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, that, you know, Trump going up against her, someone with such a long resume, with so much experience, even if you don't agree that everything she did in government was right, she does have a lot of experience in government. She was Secretary of State. She was a U.S. Senator. She was First Lady. That, you know, Trump isn't going to be able to match the experience level when it comes to that. But, you know, at the same time, there, you know, you look at poll after poll that just shows that, like the caller, there are so many Americans who are tired of the same old politicians. They don't want another Bush. They don't want another Clinton. You know, they want someone new with fresh ideas. Donald Trump, you know, he's ran a business for so many years. You know, they do believe that he can, quote unquote, make good deals for America. And they want, you know, someone who can do that. And so, you know, I think it's I don't want to prejudge the outcome of the election, but, you know, certainly that's something that the Republican candidates are trying to impress upon voters' minds as they go to the polls.
Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz brought in a whale of a lot of money after he, as you write, shamed CNBC moderators for trying to turn the Republican race into a cage match. $1 million just on that night?
No, it wasn't just on that night. That was over, like, the 22 hours, you know, from, you know, include that night and the next day. But that being said, I know that he brought in that night something like $750,000. The rest, you know, so while the rest of it came the next day, he got a lot of it. He did get a lot of it that night. And for comparison purposes, I know that people think there's quite a bit of money floating around in politics right now. But for comparison purposes, you know, that is actually a lot of money to bring in, even in a 2-day period. You know, when the candidates last had to file, a lot of them, you know, reported over 3 months. $6 million, you know, or less than right. that. So to bring in $1 million in you know, a 24-hour period is a big deal.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in Racine next. Hi, Bill.
Yes.
Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
The comment that I have is, with us having boots on the ground and Russia indiscriminately bombing all rebels, that leaves us in a position where we may wind up confronting Russia because of our troops being involved and getting bombed. So I guess I have some real concerns about why are we doing it that way.
What do you think we should be doing, Bill?
I think we should be pulling back, and I think we should allow the forces that are there, minus Russia would be nice, but allow the forces there to settle their issues. We're trying to impose outside solutions for inside problems. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a big mistake in the Far East.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your call. Francesca.
I do think that President Obama was content to allow the situation to resolve itself before the rise of ISIS. Because, you know, for callers who aren't, or listeners who aren't as familiar with what's going on in Iraq and Syria right now, you know, Syria's president, or, you know, by other names, dictator over there, you know, he has dropped chemical weapons, reportedly, you know, on his own people. And the moderate rebels are not just fighting the terrorists. They're also fighting the president of Syria. And I think before ISIS, when it was, you know, just them trying to oust the president of Syria, that President Obama and the United States was content to just allow those people resolve the situation themselves. But when ISIS came in and, you know, disrupted the country, then you have basically a place that turns into kind of a vacuum for terrorism, because it has, you know, leadership that's not trusted by the people. You know, it doesn't have an effective military force to fight them off. And I think that becomes a point in which the U.S. and other countries from around the world, it's not just the United States. You know, I'd like to point out again, it's a 60-country coalition from around the world that's, you know, like fighting ISIS in Iraq and Syria. I think that's a point in which, you know, they got involved, because ISIS and terrorism and the things that are going on there don't just affect Syria or Iraq. You know, this is something that affects all of these countries, particularly the ones that are in the region, because ISIS is threatening to spill over into their borders and do the same thing, you know, in their country. So it's a very complicated situation, you know, that just goes beyond terrorism or the United States' feelings about the leader of a certain country.
Thank you so much for your call, Bill. What are you covering this week, Francesca?
Well, this week I am actually covering Hillary Clinton.
Oh.
So, yeah, which could be very interesting. She might be on a certain TV show, late night TV show this week. So I might get to accompany her to that. Fingers crossed of all the cool campaign events I could possibly get to cover. I wouldn't necessarily mind having to go to Hollywood. But this week I am covering Hillary Clinton, depending on where she goes, and so that'll be fun. And then next week I'm at the debate.
This must be, well, you're young and very enthusiastic. I hear it in your voice. But this is a long haul, isn't it? You're hopping all over the place.
Well, what you couldn't hear as we did this entire interview was that I was drinking a sugar-free Red Bull. So that's what you're hearing in my voice, is the energy drinks that I drink every day.
Oh, Francesca.
And
oh, no.
No, but it is fun. It is fun. I'm having a great time, and I think that's really, if you're the, you know, a campaign reporter, what keeps you going is this is something you really have to love to do, because it does take you a away from home a lot. You're working incredibly crazy hours like this week. You know, I don't even know my own schedule because it completely depends on what Hillary Clinton's doing. And when you cover the White House, it's the same way. I do know what the president's up to usually every week, but then, you know, something changes. You can't account for Joe Biden deciding that he's not going to run for president, making that speech, right, you know, when he did it. There are so many variables. So you have to be a person that is okay with that and is okay to pick up at any moment and pack a bag and run. And so if you're a person that demands structure in your life, this is not the job for you.
No, I'm sure it's not. Well, come visit us if you're in, well, you will be in Milwaukee. We'll be around.
Yes, I will.
All right.
And
thanks.
I will come.
Thanks, Francesca. Okay, we won't have Red Bull, though. We'll have chocolate.
I'll settle for chocolate.
All right. Thank you. Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for DailyMail.com. She is covering the 2016 presidential race as well and hopping all over the place. Thanks to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for production of this show and on-air production here in our studios, not too far from the Milwaukee Theater in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio. Excuse me, and we'll return and talk about procrastination. That will be next. Stay with us.